Welcome to the first ever Providence Journal Book Club with Reading with Robin. Thank you so much for being
here.
Isn't
this so fun?
Hi, everybody. This is our first shot. We're very casual. We're very excited. We're bookishly happy.
Yeah. You're in on the experiment now. We'll see if this works,
we're
right?
Part of the experiment. And we are so excited. And this will live. So if people aren't watching it live, they'll be able to. So it's the Providence Journal Book Club with Reading with Robin. We're discussing the murder list. You've read it. You've had 2 full weeks, so there's no excuses. If you haven't read it, there will be spoilers, so you can stop right here, or you don't have to stop right here. You can stop soon, and then you can watch it after you've finished. When you're hiding away from your family at the holiday and you need a little bit of joy, you can hide away. Do you ever do that? Do you ever say, I'll be right back?
And all the time.
Yeah. And Erin is saying all the time. Yeah. And so, hi, Erin. Thank you for doing
this. I was going to say, yeah, I've got my thank yous too, yeah.
You know, there's a time in the holidays when you just want to like curl up on a cozy chair and get lost in a book, and everybody else can fight over the leftover stuffing and why somebody didn't heat up the mashed potatoes.
It's always something.
You do that. And you can also come back and hear this discussion when you finish the book and you think, ooh, I wish I had somebody to talk to about this.
And you can even comment later, because Hank, you have been amazing at that. Okay. Just tag Hank, Philippi Ryan, and then she'll see it, and then she will answer you, and you have been amazing. And this is a very interactive book club. So first, thank you to Erin, who's holding the camera. And that's not easy to do, because I've had that job.
Yeah.
You have to have a steady hand.
Talk to me in an hour.
I know. And Alan Rosenberg for asking me if I would help to coordinate this. And I remember getting that email and I was so excited. And so here we are. And I'm allowing myself to introduce myself. I'm Robin, host of Reading with Robin. And I am all things bookish, and you can find me on my Facebook page at Reading with Robin. You can find and robincall.com, and from there. I was going to ask you to introduce me.
Well, you know, I was thinking we should start over and I should introduce you.
Oh, we can't really start over, but come ahead, because we've known each other a long time.
Yeah, and everybody knows Robin in Reading World, and there's so many books out there, and we rely on you, and we have for how many years?
A lot.
18 years. To sort of cut through all the books and tell us what the jewels are. You know, I know we were talking earlier and you said, Why do I have to tell you what the book is about? Just trust me on this.
Exactly.
And
just
read
trust
it. And we do, right? We do. We read what Robin says, and we
Thank
really
you.
Rely on that. Thank you for this.
Oh, you're welcome.
Somebody has to do the hard job of reading all the
books. You know
what?
It is such a chore, and every day that the books come to the front door and we'll say, like, oh, more books, they honestly come to the house 2 to 3 times, sometimes 4 times, because it's FedEx, the mail, UPS, why they don't coordinate, why UPS comes twice sometimes, UPS, I don't
know.
And
the UPS guy will say to me, here are some more books for you, ma'am.
I'm like, yeah, it's to share.
That's so funny,
and I can't rip them open quickly enough. I mean, we get, so and there are some packages that are easier to open, and there are those really, really difficult little jiffies, and you're like, why are they making this so hard? You know, and then
are you loving this?
Yes.
Is this like completely what your life? I mean, there is nothing better than book mail, though.
And you have a lot of it at the Journal, I see.
And the shape of the book, and you wonder what this is.
And there are certain publishers who are like, this is going to be good. And then there's some that I say, do they know what I do? Have they ever seen anything that I've ever done?
So
but I find them a home.
Why did you all decide at the Providence Journal to do the book club with you? How did that start, and what's the point of it?
Well, Alan, our editor, sent me a lovely email saying that we were thinking of ways to engage with our subscribers, and the subscribers are readers, and they like to comment. They did a Providence Journal Insiders page, and trying to think of more content that the readers would enjoy. And so Alan sent me this wonderful email. I was so excited, and I was like, just when you think there are enough book clubs everywhere, another place for a book club, and the readers would enjoy that. So that's what happened.
And the Providence community is such a vital community, and the ProJo community is such a vital community.
It's
and you're picking
legendary.
Books that take place in New England. So
to
that's
start.
Quite perfect as well.
Thank to you. Start. To start, and that's why we knew the murder list was at the top of my list. And I was, really excited. And also, because we get so many books, I want to find places to share them. And so if a book doesn't work someplace, or depending on when it comes out, I still have them, like, my sight set on them. And somehow I work it out. And so I was really glad that we got to do this and that everybody, Aaron was thrilled, Alan was thrilled. So I was like, we set the bar really high.
We really did.
There's something to that also. And the readers have been back and forth with you. People are thrilled. Everybody is really thrilled.
Well, it is an interesting, you know, it's a fabulous idea to have a, I mean, you talked about you were thrilled and Alan was thrilled, but I was thrilled. I still am thrilled. I know that it looks like my feet are touching the ground, but they are not touching the ground. I'm still floating about this. But the cool part about having a book club on Facebook with a community that's already sort of coalesced is that you can come here and talk to us anytime you want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be right. 7 o'clock on Tuesday because that's when something else is happening for you. But you can read at your own pace and talk at your own pace. And you know, as the author, I'm happy, delighted, thrilled to pop in every day and see what people are talking about and see what questions people have and see what you're asking about. We're all nonfiction fans and this is psychological suspense.
Nothing better than
and,
that.
Isn't that true? And but yeah. sometimes, you know, reading is such a solitary thing, but sometimes you just want somebody to talk to.
Oh yeah, can you believe what she said and what they did?
Yeah. And as an author, especially of a book like The Murder List, I love to talk to people about it. You know, I'm sitting in my office by myself thinking, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And when I figure it out, I think, ooh, I can't wait to talk to people about
this. Great? And I like what you said because there were some comments, and again, this is brand new. We're working it out. Aaron, Alan, and I are in constant communications about how things are going to work. So some people were concerned. Well, firstly, it was cute because some people were in the middle of other books. So they wanted to finish those. So we appreciate that. And we're just starting. And Aaron rightly said, you know, before the holiday, let's sort of wrap it up here and then start fresh. So, you know, I don't want anyone to feel like, well, I didn't get a chance and I'm still reading. Because like Hank said, you can still come back and ask questions and... See, so far we have spoiled nothing. So far you've enjoyed this banter.
And you know, I think
and you've missed nothing.
That, you know, once in book club, always in book club.
Right.
Right? I mean, I'll come back and chat with you about The Murder List if you haven't read it, if you read it tomorrow, if you read it over Thanksgiving or the holidays. You know, I'm here to
So talk. Don't worry.
I'm not in the club and then out of the club. I'm in the club.
She's
and
not
then
going anywhere.
And you are
she
in the club. You're a lifer.
She is
we're
in
not letting you
that's
out.
That's right. She will become an alum as soon as this broadcast is done and then the book lives on and readers can continue to find it, and that's what readers do. They share books. They're going to be at their holiday saying, oh my goodness, the Providence Journal started this great book club with Reading with Robin. Why don't you join in? You're a subscriber, or be a subscriber, and then join in. And I think, and that's the joy of books. That's why I do what I do.
You know, I think you're so right. I think we, and I promise we're going to talk about the book.
We might not, but you don't have to worry. We might not get to it.
What readers don't always realize is, you know, when if you love a book, the best thing you can do for an author is just to tell. Remember that Pearl commercial?
She tells
two friends and they
so
tell
on,
friends
and mm-hmm. so on
and
that's
so on. How it is with books. And so it's been a joy for me, because it's all about me. It's been a joy for me to get to have new readers as a result of the ProJo
so
Book Club, and to talk with those people who now are friends. You know, we started out as strangers and we end up as friends because of books.
I saw a lot of those comments. People really do connect and there's a difference in taking the time to really, and I know that the authors that I know who are very successful at connecting with their readers and, you know, in the past however many years we've been online doing this kind of thing, it is very different than receiving a letter, maybe ever meeting somebody at a book signing. And that connection, those are your readers forever. And I really respect authors who take that time, because it is time.
You know, it's interesting because I write the book and I have this book and I love this book. But I still think, and I don't mean to sound sort of woo-woo about it, but I still think that the book isn't fulfilled, isn't really itself, until the reader is reading it. I mean, it's my book out, but it's into your brain, into your consciousness, into your emotions. And once you connect with the book, then that world comes alive.
Oh, it's like a full circle community of book love. And what Hank said, and it's something I say at the Reading with Robin events and on my podcast, if you love a book, that is one of the best things you can do for authors. Request it at your libraries. Mm-hmm. Do Goodreads reviews. Go on Amazon. It doesn't have to be a 4-page review. In fact, please don't do that. But if you can just do that, it will take you a few minutes. You've loved the book, write a few sentences, give it the 5 stars. on Goodreads, on Amazon.
On BookBub.
BookBub, I have to get more involved with BookBub. They're wonderful. I just don't know them as well.
The BookBub people are quite amazing. They're quite devoted.
Boston.
Well, Cambridge. Quite amazing, quite devoted, quite brilliant. And really in love with books. I was in their headquarters. And just full of books and people who are, you know, devoted readers and really eager to sort of spread the word about books, kind of like you are.
Yeah, I got to meet them. They actually came in and had a meeting at What Cheer Writers Club about, I don't know, months ago, and everyone was excited that the BookBub people were here. But those are really big things to do. Also, tell your friends. Yeah. Tell your friends about the books. And the author has graciously written this book for you, so it's a little something. It's a little something you can do. Let me introduce Hank. Are we done?
No, we should.
Thanks so much for having us at Book Club, Erin.
That was the pre-show.
That's always my favorite part. Whenever I do an interview and we do that before, I'm always like, oh, I wish I was taping. But some of it's highly inappropriate. So after we've thanked Erin and Alan and the Providence Journal for having us, I'm going to read Hank. If you go to HankPhilippiRyan.com, she's got the short bio and she's got the longer version. And they're all really great. I'll read the short version, but you got to read the long one too. But
the long version has all my secrets, all my background, my first job, and all that sort of stuff.
I know you have such a fascinating career, and I remember. Oh my goodness, we met a long time ago.
At about book four, I think, right, or maybe book one. Because this is book 11, if you can believe
it. And this is a standalone.
It is.
And that's the other thing I was going to ask you about, the difference between series. Let's talk about that. Okay, so Hank Phillippe Ryan is an on-air investigative reporter for Boston's WHDH-TV. She's won 36 Emmys and dozens more journalism honors. The nationally best-selling author of 11 mysteries, Ryan's also an award winner in her second profession with 5 Agathas, 3 Anthonys, 2 Macavities, the Daphne, and the other woman, the coveted Mary Higgins Clark Award.
And we loved her, right?
Mary Higgins Clark, oh my goodness.
The goddess of us all.
One of my mother's favorites. Critics call her a master of suspense and a superb and gifted storyteller. And she is the only author to have won the Agatha in 4 different categories: Best First, Best Novel, Best Short Story, and Best Nonfiction. Her novels have been named Library Journal's Best of 2014, 15, 16. Her highly acclaimed first standalone psychological suspense, Trust Me, is an Agatha nominee and was also named a Best Thriller by New York Post, BookBub, Real Simple Magazine, Crime Reads, and Crime Element. Hank's newest book is
the short one.
Short version.
Keep listening.
This is The Murder List. New York Times bestseller Liv Constantine calls it an exhilarating thrill ride. AJ Finn says exciting, explosive, relentless, and B.A. Paris says it's her best yet. I have a question about that too. And Library Journal starred review says masterfully plotted with a twisted ending, a riveting character-driven story. She's the founder of MWA University, past president of the National Sisters in Crime, and you can visit her, as I said, on HankPhilippiRyan.com, and from there, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. What is that? Welcome to the show, Hank Phillippe Ryan. What's it like when you hear best yet? You know, I mean, because they're all the best, and you always want to be getting better, but I always wonder how that feels.
Best yet is great. When B.A. Paris says best yet, I'm like, yes, bring it on. Thank you. That's fine. And I love that. Any praise, you know, any praise is lovely. And from someone as fabulous as B.A. Paris or A.J. Finn or Liv Constantine, my idol people,
Mary
Kubica, when you get praise from someone who knows what they're doing, it is always so amazing. When I sit at my desk, typing this book, making it up as I go, no outline, we can talk about that. And I'm thinking, is anybody going to read this? Is anybody going to like this? And so that moment when a colleague reads it and loves it, there's just nothing like that. And then it goes to the readers. I mean, I remember when I wrote my first book so many years ago, but it wasn't so many. when I wrote my first book, there was this moment when I realized, wait a minute, people are going to read
this. Isn't that wild? And they're going to be watching this, too.
Yeah, thanks for telling me that.
Yeah, awesome.
But, you know, so the idea of that connection, and that's what we were talking about earlier, the idea of that connection with readers who are savvy. I mean, I think my readers are smart and knowledgeable, and they know what they're doing, and they know what a good book is, and they know about structure and character and theme and development, and they know how an ending should be, and it's difficult to surprise them, you know.
Well, that is the dazzling thing about, well, this book for sure, but about when a book speaks to you. Because you've got to be thinking there, how can this end? How can I surprise them? And do you surprise yourself? Like, to me, that is the brilliance. That's how your mind's working.
You know, the idea of a writer's brain and how a writer's brain works is so fascinating to me, because I don't use an outline, as I said. And the way I know what happens next, I don't know until I write the next word and the next sentence and the next paragraph. And so I'm just typing along, and I think, okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, that's how I get to the computer every day. That's what brings me to the computer every day. It's like, I wonder what's going to happen
next. So no outline. You don't have notes.
No. Well, so I figure out what's going to happen. I think, what's going to happen next? You know, and that's why I write. And Sue Grafton called that the magic. I mean, she called that the magic of the writer brain, that there's something in our subconscious that if we're lucky and if we're open to it, sort of unfolds, and the story presents itself to you in a way that if you try to predict it, you will fail. I mean, and
if it's too forced,
well, you can't make it be. You know, you can't make your. You know, if you think and think, I need an idea.
What will they do? What will?
Or you can't make yourself have a good idea. A good idea.
Yeah, sort of be open to it.
It comes. I mean, Melissa. I forget who said this, but someone said, the universe is full of ideas, and if one happens to land on your shoulder, you know, you just grab.
Pay attention to that.
You know, you just grab it. So, you know, people say, "Wow, the ending of The Murder List. You really surprised me." I'm like, "Yeah,
I surprised
you." Wasn't that a surprise?
Well, I
surprised
myself.
And you
try and think. I mean, not because you're writing it and you're waiting for that to come, but when you're reading somebody's book. I never used to think like, aha, was that a clue or whatever? And a little bit now I do.
Oh, it's the scourge. It's the scourge. Yeah. I think it's the scourge of a smart author and the scourge of a smart reader. I think it's, you know, the scourge of someone who's interested in crime fiction and sort of knows the architecture of a mystery, the architecture of a thriller, how a story has to go. And so we're always trying to outthink the author.
I mean, it's more of a recent thing, because I've come to suspense and thrillers and domestic suspense and psychological drama really in the last couple of years.
Huh.
Those were not my genres, and now they're so my genres.
So now
I'm trying to figure it out more than I ever used to.
My husband and I will watch crime shows on TV, and I'll say, it's the sister, or I'll say, like, oh, someone's going to drown, and Jonathan will say, why do you say someone's going to drown? I'm like, well, there's a river.
There's water.
Yeah,
right.
Why would they put that there?
Somebody caught, they're going to die.
And he says, oh, clearly so.
Right.
And he says, can't you just
enjoy
watch it?
Can't
you just watch it? And I say, no, I can't just watch it. And so I am aware my fellow readers are on the same wavelength as that. When they read The Murder List, or when they read any crime fiction, domestic suspense, standalone psychological suspense like this is, they're trying to figure out.
So then how do you stay ahead when you're also waiting for it to land on your shoulder like a surprise?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, that's a puzzle, isn't it? Because people say, oh, I saw that coming. And, in some book, they'll say, oh, I saw that coming. And I think, you did? Because I didn't.
Isn't that interesting?
So, and that is because my readers are smart. My readers are smart. And I have talked to groups about this. And I say, how many of you try to figure it out? And they're like, half people.
Oh, really?
And then how many of you just let it be? And the other half of the people just read along for
which,
the enjoyment.
Which side looked happier?
They both looked happy. I was the happiest because
they were
all
your readers, right? Exactly. I always wonder that, because it's easy to say I saw it coming, because how can you disagree?
And when,
okay, you did.
And when you figure it out, though, that's the other question. If you figure it out, what my goal is either you never see it coming,
mm-hmm.
or you figure it out at just the right time, and this sort of blossoming realization.
Right.
Happens where, and then you feel smart.
Exactly, because you think about the things that led up to it, and
yeah.
okay, that's how come, oh, that all
but
makes
what
sense.
I try to do in my books, especially in The Murder List and in Trust Me, this psychological standalone before this one, is I call them like sort of Trojan horse books, mm-hmm. that you think you're reading one thing, and then you realize you're reading something else, that something else completely surprising was inside the structure
and
that
is
you
the coolest. I mean, that is the coolest thing, because it's like, look over here, but you don't see what's happening over here, because you're such a magician with your words. So
I love that. A magician with my words.
Right?
Thank you.
Add that to your bio.
Exactly. I'm going to put that in the
long. I think the bio is quite long enough.
I'll put that in the long version.
The long version. Extended play. It's, well, you have had and continue, obviously, have such an amazing career. And those are all, that's why I wanted to actually read the long one, because I just think it's so cool. So go to HankPhilippiRyan.com. And as I said, from there, you can go to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
And if you come to the Facebook, if you go to come to the Projo book page, I'll answer questions about that as well. I'll even publish the long bio. And you're like, no, please don't publish.
No, please publish. Well, and do you, you know, it's a lot to keep all of this up before we get into the book. How do you, you know, manage that, and how do you parse out your time? Because keeping in touch with people is really an important piece now.
You know, I've been a television reporter for 43 years,
wow.
if you can manage. I'm still on the air at Channel 7 in Boston. Investigative reporter. I've wired myself with hidden cameras and confronted corrupt politicians and gone undercover and in disguise and chased down criminals. And so I still do that.
Love
I mean,
that.
that's what I do in my day job. But I love this sort of, I didn't start writing till I was 55.
Which is another thing, people,
which is
15 years ago,
which is very crazy. And it's so amazing. I mean, I always wanted to be an author. We can talk about that at some point. And it's fascinating and sort of reassuring to realize that, you know, at that age, at seriously middle age, like older than middle age, I started a whole new career, and then now I'm here with my 11th book, and it shows you, if you have a dream of something, of anything, that it's never too late.
I agree.
To start that.
I think so. And to digress in a way, Sara Bliss has written a book called Take the Leap. I don't know if you and that's what it's about. All of these amazing stories of people who have changed careers, added to the careers, done mm-hmm. a pivot, whatever. And I love that. I didn't even realize when you started doing writing, but I knew it was at some point in your career. That, so was it just like rattling around where you're like, I'm doing all of this investigation, I'm thinking this way, or I would
well,
just not
I think
write?
It's some of each, you know, I think some of each. You know, what happened was, I was at Channel 7, and I, too long to tell, you can read the long version, but I just had a good idea.
Yeah.
I had a good idea. I went home that night and I said to my husband, sweetheart, you know, I have a really good idea. I have a great idea for a novel of suspense. I'm going to write a book. And he says, great, honey. He says, do you know how to write a book? And I'm like, how hard can it be? You know, I've read a million of these, and I had read a million of them.
Sure.
I grew up on mystery novels, and I read mysteries all through my career.
So you sort of get the arc?
You know, it's interesting because as a reporter, you know, for all these years as an investigative reporter, I have written stories every day with a beginning and a middle and an end, mm-hmm. with a character who you care about, a problem that needs to be solved. You're tracking down leads and following clues and doing research, and in the end, the good guys win and the bad guys get what's coming to them, and moreover, you get some justice and you change the world a little bit. And I do that as an investigative reporter, and I do that in crime fiction too. It's the same mm-hmm. rhythm of the story. And what was interesting to me about it was when I wondered whether I could make stuff up after all these years of telling you absolutely the truth, the challenge
of
sitting
down. How refreshing that's what you're doing on the news, too.
Telling the truth.
Exactly.
Exactly. But I mean, now, you know, as a crime fiction author, my job was to tell the truth, still, the truth of the book.
Exactly.
The truth of the story, which has to be just as true for fiction as real life has to be true for real life.
Which is interesting, right?
True
fiction,
book.
Right. Truth in fiction.
Because how often, you know, how frustrating is it to read a book and then you would say, that would never happen.
And
I'm not talking about, you know, I'm all about zombies and I'm all about aliens and I'm all about any kind of fantasy and fiction. That's all good. That's the real world of that real world.
Right.
You know, and that's fine. And we embrace that. I'm just talking about something that within the world that the author is trying to create, doesn't make sense.
It just does not. Mm-hmm. It wasn't researched, or it doesn't make sense, or couldn't have happened.
Nobody would do that.
Right.
You know, nobody would do that. So I'm really careful in my books to make them authentic and realistic, and well researched in a way that doesn't come out except in reality, in you know, sort of truth. I mean, Tess Gerritsen always talks about when an author's research slip is showing.
Ooh.
You know, like somebody does tons of research into medieval armor, and they're like, by God, I'm gonna put that in my book. And you think, I don't need to know all of this.
Right.
And so I want my research to be seamless. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to know that I did research. I like in the murder list, what happens?
Yeah, talk a little bit about the research
there. Well, in the legal world and in the psychological world, and you know, in the world of striving to be good at your job and striving to win, and how lawyers work and how court cases work. I've covered a million murder cases, you know, from Ralph Richard, if anyone from Providence mm-hmm. remembers
yeah.
this. And I covered the Klaus von Bülow retrial, and I was here every day in Providence covering that
trial.
This is
when I first moved here. When was that, 80s?
Oh, yeah, 80s. And it's so funny, in his obituary in the New York Times, on the in the picture, there's a picture of me chasing after Klaus von Bülow.
Really?
With the microphone. On the day that he was acquitted, that was
wow.
that was pretty interesting. And so, come on Facebook to the Projo page, and I'll tell you my Klaus von Bülow story.
Oh, I love that.
Which is a pretty interesting.
Can you post
story.
That? Will you post that picture?
Sure.
I want to see that picture.
So. You'll recognize me by my long brown hair. That's how long ago. That's how long ago it was.
Wow, it's really you've given us so much. I think my head is going in like a million directions.
Well, so when you were talking about the murder list and why the research for that is authentic.
Yeah.
So
it's just fascinating.
I've covered murder trials. I know how the defense works. I know how the prosecution works. I know how the defendants feel.
So do you know what's going to happen?
Stake.
Usually.
In the book?
No, in real
in the
life.
Trial? No.
No.
In a trial? No. No, no, no. Because in a trial, for me to cover a trial, you have to be objective.
Right.
And so, and my husband is a criminal defense attorney.
Of course he is.
And so.
I had a feeling. I think I did know that, but like that would make perfect sense.
It's great to have in-house counsel. I have to tell you.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. You know, every day when I was writing the murder list, every day at about 3, it turned out for some reason, I would get on the phone and say, sweetheart, it's me.
Hey, honey.
I'm calling with the legal question of the
call
day.
Say I love you. And
no,
by the way,
I have a question
for you. Right.
And so, but really it was Jonathan, one of Jonathan's cases that gave me the idea for the murder list.
Wow.
I'll tell you two quick things about that. My career as a reporter really serves my novels. In my Charlotte McNally series and the Jane Ryland series, those are just, full of reality of reporter, the stakes and the pressure and the secret stuff that you don't know when you see me on TV, you don't know what I'm thinking, and that's all in the books.
Yeah,
they're murder
right.
mysteries,
right.
Fast-paced murder mysteries set in Boston and New England. But the idea for the murder list came at the kitchen table. One Sunday morning, Jonathan and I were having breakfast, and he was telling me about a new murder case that he has at the time that was a really pretty unpleasant, grisly, high-stakes, sad, as they all are, murder case. And with one side of my brain, I was thinking about the evidence and how Jonathan could present it. And in the other track of my brain, I was thinking, what a good guy he is. You know, he's standing up for the rights of the individual. He's protecting this defendant from the hammer fist of the prosecution. He's making sure that the jury understands that people are innocent until proven guilty. You know, he's really standing up for the little guy. What a good person he is. And then I started thinking about the prosecutor and his wife across town. And was she thinking, the person who wants to put my husband's client in prison for the rest of his life, was she thinking, what a good guy he is, he's standing up for the rights of the public, he's protecting us all from criminals, he's standing up for law and order, he's standing up for the big picture of the right for all of us to feel safe on the streets, what a good guy he is. And I thought, wait a minute, everybody can't be the good guy, even
right.
though everybody thinks they're the good guy. And I wanted to write a novel about how it is in a murder case, the highest stakes there could be, if the prosecution thinks they're the good guy and the defense thinks they're the good guy, how does the jury decide what good means? And how can I have this And when the lawyers want to win, you know, if you ask a lawyer what's a good case, and they'll say it's a winnable case,
exactly.
A winnable case. How far would lawyers go on either side to win the case? And how does a young lawyer, the main character Rachel North, decide whether she wants to be on the side of the prosecution or whether she wants to be on the side of the defense? And the reader becomes the jury to decide what good means and what good means to you, and a little bit of insight into how the justice system works or doesn't work. And it got really fascinating to me. So this is not Jonathan's case in any way,
right.
Not even close, not
but
even
just,
nearby.
It was just the idea came to because of, yeah.
Just the idea of that passionate, driven, potentially manipulative search for justice with the little guy in the middle. But, you know, I call the murder list a cat and mouse game, but which character is the cat and which character is the mouse? And that's what surprised me in the end.
Wow. So you're at your table, having your coffee, whatever.
Talking about murder like we do.
As you do, as a couple, and you think, you have an Elle Woods moment of, I have a completely different idea. That was also illegal.
Yeah.
Legal,
I know,
a very deep legal story.
Legally Blonde. It's a great,
oh my
a great
goodness.
Movie. We
One
love
of the
Legally Blonde.
Best ever.
Yeah.
And she comes up with a completely brilliant idea. So do you get up now and start making notes? Are you thinking, you like saying, Jonathan, just keep my coffee warm, I'll be right back.
Well, here's the other interesting part about that. The murder list is a real thing.
Well, that was always, I learned that. I didn't know there was such a thing called a murder list.
Isn't that interesting? In Massachusetts, at least, the murder list is the list of lawyers who are experienced enough and trained enough and knowledgeable enough to be able to be appointed to handle murder cases of defendants who can't afford to pay for a good lawyer. You know, the feeling being that, obviously, that everyone deserves to have the best possible defense, even if they can't pay for it.
Right.
So Jonathan, my husband, is on the murder list in Massachusetts.
It's a great title,
it
but
is.
Then also, right away, when I started it, I learned a little something.
And also that,
which
of course,
so cool.
Like all of my books, the murder list means several other things
of course.
As well. But that was
it's a great
that
title.
Was the moment that the book actually blossomed into the possibility of reality, that I thought it could be called the murder list. And what could that mean besides that list of lawyers? And when I started writing it, I had no idea what else it meant. You know, I had no idea. So you, as the readers, will have to tell me what you think the murder list
and comment.
Really means.
Do that.
Yeah.
You can start commenting. I have no idea what time it is. Like, time has stood.
Time has stopped. any meeting.
Absolutely. When we're talking about books and writerly things and author experience, time literally.
Question. You obviously know your stuff about books and authors. The murder list was the title before there was a book.
Ah.
Before, and that, like, there's a problem.
No pressure.
Right.
It's a great title.
Trust Me, my first psychological standalone, Trust Me. And if you have that book, look at the cover and turn it sideways and then tell me what you see.
Oh, cool.
Do it.
I'll do it.
Anyway, the book Trust Me, that was like the fifth title. It's the perfect title now. But we had no idea what to call it.
Because that is a tricky thing. And this is when a title seems to be such a fit, I can't even imagine what other titles there might have been. Do you want to, you're welcome to join in too, Erin.
No, I'm just...
I feel
I'm having fun.
You things to say.
No.
I remember when I was...
We should check the Facebook and see if any Facebook questions...
We haven't gotten any questions yet.
We
should dive into the
questions.
Yes.
Yeah, you do have questions. So
you're all looking at my long bio, right?
They're all busy.
Right now.
Look at the bio, and we're going to see the picture later with the... Klaus von Bülow. Okay, so one of the questions which I loved is, so much of how we behave depends on what we decide reality is. One wrong decision, trapped in the dead end of your own making. Did you have a life experience that led you to write the statement? It was in quotes.
Every day, right? Every day. Every day we make... You know, one of the cool things, what a good question, what a thoughtful question.
Yes, it was, we're not saying from whom it is.
But you know who you are.
Which it was a good question.
Every day, one of the cool things about writing from different points of view, and this book, as you know, has Rachel, the law student, who's absolutely a reliable narrator because she tells you absolutely what she believes to be true. She's married to Jack Kirkland, who the defense attorney, the strong, powerful, manipulative, possibly faithful, we think, defense attorney, right? And she's working for the prosecutor, Martha Gardner, the determined, powerful, manipulative, wise, we wonder.
I love the editorial.
I didn't know.
No, we did. Yes,
I didn't
right.
know when I was writing it
right.
what they were. And so I wanted to have you, as the reader, understand the story from Rachel's point of view and how she saw the world and how she made decisions. And then you turn the triangle a little bit and look through Jack's eyes. And now you think, maybe that's what's true. Maybe Rachel isn't really understanding what's going on. And then you turn the triangle again and you see it through Martha's point of view. And now you think, now I wonder what's right. And then you think, are Jack and Martha in cahoots? Are Jack and Martha enemies? What about Rachel and Martha? Are they the two powerful women now who are now strong against the man? You know, how is that triangle gonna work? And so you as the reader, the cool part about writing in three points of view is that you as the reader know more than the characters do.
Right.
And that dramatic irony of the book and that understanding that you have of like, oh no, don't do that. That's a wrong decision. You know, that's the engine.
You have information
of the book,
that,
right?
that
you have,
each
exactly.
character doesn't
exactly.
have.
Exactly.
And I think to the way the book starts off, where you're looking at, okay, here's a marriage and here's an opportunity for Rachel. And what is Jack thinking about? Like right away, there's that marital tension, possibility of that tension, which just grabbed me right away because I was thinking also that sense of a reliable narrator.
Yeah.
And how does the reader know?
When you see Jack initially through Rachel's eyes, as you have, you think, why is she being so wishy-washy?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she doing whatever he wants her to do? And why is he being so kind of nasty to her? But then you have to remember, this is how Rachel is seeing it.
Right.
The author, am presenting Jack through Rachel. It's like the reporter Clea.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet Clea, the reporter, through Rachel's eyes, she's one person. When you meet Clea, the reporter, through Martha's eyes, oh, she's someone else. When you meet the reporter through Jack's eyes, oh, she's someone else. So you, the reader, again, have to decide who this person really is.
Same as in real life.
Same as
you think that
life.
When people
yes.
say, you know, oh, you really don't know them. Well, I know the them that I know.
Exactly.
That's the them that I'm yes. seeing. That
and
them isn't so nice. The other them might be lovely.
Don't you think?
Right.
And as an author in this particular case, my goal was to sort of, I know you're smart. I know you're a smart reader. And I know that you understand this. So now watch what I'm going to
Yeah,
do here.
With your magic.
Thank you. I mean, it's,
yeah.
It's
well,
fun.
That is why it's a compulsively readable book, and that's why picking Murder List, like I said, we can only go hopefully across it. I don't know.
Readable book. Can I just put that on the cover of
I would love. I just can't wait to be.
I think you came up with
day.
A new title.
I love that because that's like that is why I read. I want to know. At whatever point in the day that I have time to read, that I think to myself, that's what I'm going home to. Like, sometimes that thought really can stop me in the middle of a day or at night or whenever it is, or when I wake up in the morning, whenever I have that time to read, which is why that is the only kind of book I will read. And anyway, so back to our questions.
Okay.
And, well, here's a question. Why did Hank decide to use an unreliable narrator in this book?
You think she's unreliable?
I was going to say, yeah, I don't... think so.
I mean, this
but that's,
is,
I'm just reading the question.
Yeah, but this is a really good question from, I'm not going to say your name, but it's a really good question because think about Scarlett O'Hara. Think about Scout Finch. Those narrators are unreliable. They're because they're not telling you the truth. They're telling you about the world as they see it. Yeah, I'll think about that another day. Right? They're
tomorrow.
They're thinking. They're telling us the world the way they see it. So they're reliable for them. And so that's what I was trying to do: is make Rachel reliable for her, and say to you, the reader, this is how Rachel truly sees the world. She truly sees that this is what happens to her, what happened to her, this is what she deserves, this is what happened to her that wasn't fair, this is what she should have. You know, we all have have those feelings of, why does everybody else always win? Why can't I have the thing? Why can't I be the winner? And so that is how Rachel is. So she's also compartmentalizing what she wants to believe and what she wants to think. And there's just some stuff she's just not going to think about. You know, I'll think about that another day, as you said.
Tomorrow's another day.
So, and then what about Jack? Is he reliable or not? What about Martha? You know, Martha draws Rachel in and says, you know, we can do this together. We're women. We have to be together.
Right there, unreliable.
But, you know, yeah, because here's this thing that she's saying to Rachel that should be lovely, that should be welcoming and supportive. And yet, is it? You know, is it? And so each of us has our own reliability and unreliability, just like the world. And so when you ask, why did she decide to use an unreliable narrator? Because every narrator is unreliable. And that's why we love psychological fiction.
Yes.
You know, if we could believe what everyone says, you know, if I as a reporter knock on the door and say, Mrs. Smith, you know, did you kill your husband? Well, yes, I did.
Thank you. Very easy.
Short book.
Oh,
short book.
I can't even imagine, you know, so, right? And yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing about, yeah. That's why crime fiction, psychological fiction, that's why it works, because we're trying to understand the psychology of the people who are in the book. And that's what makes it fabulous.
Did your husband ever come to you to help you solve something because you're so great at this? Did he ever say, like, here's a case, Hank, what do you think?
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there was one case in particular, and I don't want to give you too many.
No, I'm just curious.
Too many things. But I said to him, you know, if this were a crime fiction novel, what would have happened? What would have happened? And I said, well, first of all, there'd be a girlfriend. And Johnson said, yeah, there is a girlfriend.
Of course
there is.
But
I said, and she would have taken out a life insurance
policy.
And he says, well, yeah, there was a girlfriend with a life insurance. I'm like, oh,
well, okay. It's done. Case closed. Next.
That wasn't it, but it was a good idea.
That is really, wow.
Isn't it?
I love that. How do you decide the gender of your characters? There seemed to be a large presence of strong female characters. That's wonderful and seems rather deliberate. I mean, anything you wrote is deliberate, but there's your question.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, the strong female characters. You know, here's the word that I think is so interesting here, choose. It's not like please forgive me for this, but it's not like I choose. It's that this is who it is in the world of the book. I will tell you, and the reason that this is such a prescient question is that at one point in writing this book, Martha Gardner was a man.
Oh.
How about that? And when I thought, you know, what if she's a woman? How does that change the dynamics of the book? You know, Rachel's relationship with a strong male prosecutor, that's gonna give you a different
yes,
attention,
absolutely.
Right? But if it's a woman, and so that is such a good question, because I did choose to make Martha Gardner. It was Bennett Gardner initially.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
And when I made her a woman, boom, the book just came together. And every book I've written has had a moment just like that, just like this question evoked, where I thought, wow, wait a minute. What if it was this way?
I think that's fascinating. So there you go with being open.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you were open to that
idea. It wasn't like you looked at your outline and went, Bennett. So no, it's Bennett. You just...
And the whole book fell into place. It was... I get goosebumps telling you about this, because that is one of the unpredictable... I did.
Yeah.
No, my face looked just like that.
Like this.
Whoa.
Are you constantly just in your day, just like having ideas, being like...
Yeah,
you know what, Erin, if I have one good idea a day, that's all I care about. Like, I'm really, I am great. If I have one good idea a day, that's all I need. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? And one good idea is very hard to, you know, come by. Very hard to come by.
Because there's the idea, and then there are the facets of the idea. And the idea may go not where you think it's going to go, but it's still percolating.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like a Rubik's Cube writing without an outline. It's like a Rubik's Cube. And you have all these colors, and you're solving the puzzle. I'm solving the book puzzle, the mystery, the thriller in my head. And I'm every day I'm twisting and turning and shaping. And at some point, it's like, and then you're like, there it is. There's the picture. There's the solution of the puzzle. And you can't get there without that process of turning and twisting and shaping and seeing how your world is going to be. And when the puzzle is solved, you know, people say, how do you know when you're finished?
Well, the colors line up.
Yeah, but they do. And right. I'll tell you that, you know, the process, this is breaking news. I just finished, like yesterday at 12:30 after midnight, the first draft of my next book.
There was a question. And, done.
Because you know what to ask.
Well, and, I guess there's that.
Yesterday morning, I was in the shower and I thought, oh my gosh, there's a doll. And I thought, there's a doll. This isn't going to mean anything to you, but it will next
Remember,
August.
It will next August.
It comes in August 2020.
August 4th, 2020.
Right.
But in the revisions of the book, that's where the book really comes to life. And when you ask, how do I know when I'm finished? Is when I'm doing revision and revision and revision, which I really enjoy. And at some point in the revision, I forget that I wrote the book.
Ah.
And I'm just reading it. I love that. And I think, oh, I'm done.
I love that. You're just reading it and you're thinking, do you ever think like, wow, that's really good?
You know what? Honestly, yeah. I will tell you from time to time, yeah. I think, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, oh, this is the worst possible thing. That's usually early on. And as the book progresses, as you know, when I get to the point of, is this okay to say? I mean, I love this book. I think, you know what, this is good.
Yes, of course.
I would read, you know.
Well, because writers, I've often heard, and it's you write the books you want to read.
Yeah.
And if you can be, you know, that much detached while you're going through the revisions and just looking at it as, not just, but looking at it as a book.
Yeah.
Would I read this?
Yeah.
I think that that's a huge tell. You should love this. We love the murder list. Well, no, yeah, but you should. You shouldn't be like, yeah, it's okay. I mean,
no,
you wrote
no,
it. It's
I love
great.
It. This is the thing that I've worked on for a year, that I'm going to have the courage and the little bit of bravery to say to you, you know, you could... You
just
could
trust us. Read it.
And that's a big step. You know, that's a big step as a person, you know, who... you know, we want to be successful and we want to be happy. And I want to, you know,
Absolutely.
Just like making your Thanksgiving turkey, you're giving something to someone and you want them to love it. You
exactly.
know, it's a chance you take. It's a big chance
you're
you
putting
take.
Yourself, you're putting yourself out there, yeah. especially for me, because I'm a vegetarian. If you gave me a turkey, I would say, no, thank you, Hank. Enjoy your...
This is in your long bio.
Thank you for the turkey.
You have more questions?
Yeah, there are more questions, and Erin edited them down because you got other questions.
I got the long version.
Yeah, this is the shorter version. So I'm wondering if you complete writing in one timeline and then do the other, or do you write in two timeline frames simultaneously? I love that the Providence Journal group has such good questions.
Yeah, they're smart.
This is a really, I don't say that lightly.
No, because it's not like, where do you get your ideas? Which is also a really good question, I have to say.
These are unexpected. These are thoughtful. Read the book.
Reader questions.
Yeah, I love that.
I wrote this book completely from beginning straight through to the end.
Okay.
So the Rachel part, and then the team like the time for the Jack part, and then seemed like the time for the Martha part. But I wrote it in a row. I don't write scenes out of order in this particular book. I didn't write the scenes out of order, just beginning, middle, end, and there it was. You know, I know people who do write one timeline and then the other, and that just makes my brain fly.
I can't.
Fly. How does anybody do that? And when I talk to those people, they say, how do you do it in a row?
Right.
You know, so some people write one and write the other and then shuffle them together.
Right.
That wouldn't work for me. But one of the keys of writing, and I know you know this from all the so many authors that you've talked to, is that everybody does it their own way.
It has to work.
You know, and you find the way that you hope works for you, and then do it that way till it doesn't work anymore. Because in the new book, I'm writing this in a... This is the hardest book I've ever written. The new book.
Is it a standalone?
It's a standalone.
Okay.
Should I just tell you the title? Because not really.
Ooh,
out there.
Sure. I mean, yeah. We love insider information.
It's called The First to Lie. The First to Lie.
Wow.
And, yeah. And it's really...
Is it the doll?
No. Forget about the doll.
I never will. Okay.
You know, Trust Me was sort of two women, Kat.
Yes.
And this is... Woman, Man, Woman, The Murder List. And The First to Lie is
great
four
title.
People.
That's
four
a
people.
Great
And who
title.
Will be the first to lie and who will be the last to find out?
That's a great, oh, what, is that the tagline?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. August 4th, 2020.
Well, another part, well, which one do you like better? There's that, and there's also, when the stakes are life and death, what does one more lie matter?
I like that too.
And we all
you can use
are
them.
Who we are for a reason.
You can use them in different slides or quotes. Or
when it gets closer to the time of making the cover, I'll put it on the Projo Book
I
Club.
I love
Facebook.
It.
Put it out for a vote.
And we'll vote.
And I often do. It's funny. I love getting from authors. I will get like, don't tell my editor I'm showing you this, but which cover do you like?
Yeah.
Don't let anyone know you've read the first. Oh, I get so, I love that. But you know, it's that initial, that take, when you see it, it's that initial reaction. Yeah. And when you said The First to Lie, right? Is that it?
Yeah.
I got the title right. So right there, it's good. Because when it's more than one or two words, it's not so easy. Yeah. But The First to Lie, I already remember it.
Thank you.
So there,
we're going to be waiting for it.
Well, that because you know, you walk into a bookstore and you're like, what's that book about the thing with the lake, maybe?
It's yellow.
It's got a lot of, and why does Rachel constantly question herself?
Why does Rachel constantly question herself? I do too, question. Not a day goes by. I mean, I think, you know, it's a good question because psychological fiction, psychological suspense is about decision making, right? It's about someone wants something and how far will they go to get it and what will they do, and they have a goal, and then there's an obstacle, and when that obstacle appears, they have to decide what to do. And the decision that a character makes reveals to us, the reader, who they are, who their personality is. So the engine of the book is that decision making, is that process of what will Rachel decide. So Rachel needs to, you know, when she questions herself, it's not only for her, but it's to encourage you, the reader, to think, maybe it's this, maybe it's this.
It's work
what
for the
would
reader
I
to do?
Yeah. What would I do? What would, and then what does Rachel do? And is that the same thing? Do you agree with Rachel or not? And if you've read the book, why Rachel constantly questions herself is because one wrong step, going back to that first question,
is everything.
One bad move, one mistake, you know, one misperception, and the whole, you know, the dominoes of her world are tumbling.
Well, because then you have to really live by that, and if you're going to make a decision, and what that cost is, and so we see the character having to grapple with that, which in real life you would do too. But as the reader, you know it's going to go one way or the other, so maybe that's what you're thinking, like, why is she questioning herself? But you're here, you're getting the inner workings.
When something is high stakes in your life, when you have a essentially life and death decision to make, you know, you're going to think about that.
We would,
you know,
think, we would hope.
We would hope.
I mean, right. There's not, you know, the sort of internal dialogue in this book is not excessive in any way. It's mostly like page turning. But if there's a smart person, that person is going to think, should I do X or Y? And here's why. Okay, I'm going to do whichever. And that's why you turn the page to see what's going to happen.
And one of the things I love about asking about a question about an inner workings of a character, and you hear this sometimes where people say, were they likable or not likable? What's, you know, what's reasonable, or an ending? Is it a satisfying ending? Like everything, you know, it's not always sort of tied up. And what does make, why does somebody being likable even matter in a story? I think that's something that I find interesting.
I do too.
Relatable,
in, you know, fascinating,
connecting,
compelling to read about. I mean, we don't like Sherlock Holmes. He's not likable, but man, you know, he's really interesting.
You understand, right?
We don't love Poirot, you know, but he is. You know, he's quirky, but you know, we love reading about Poirot. We certainly don't like Hannibal Lecter, but you know, who could be a more compelling character than that? So I think when you talk about likable, that's an interesting gauge for people to have,
right.
And I hear this all the time, and I think, really, huh, likable, I don't really need likable, I need interesting.
Exactly.
I need intriguing, I need compelling, I need someone
multidimensional, and try and figure out, are people asking questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to ask it?
Sure. But it we are venturing into spoiler territory. If
that's,
we want to,
you,
we can save it for the end if we're
Well, what time is it?
I have
no idea. I
mean, it is.
Well, you guys are amazing.
Well, it's so
Thank
much
you.
Fun to talk about mm-hmm. all of this. I don't. If you would like to do that, because we probably, I don't know if people are, and people will
is
come back.
Is the spoiler in the question?
The spoiler is in the question.
Do you think it's okay?
Why don't you message me?
Okay.
Message me at Hank Philip Urien on Facebook, and I will talk to you about that. I'm very wary. You know, isn't this
Look,
so funny?
We said we would do it, but then yet I feel bad.
I feel bad, too.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I can't believe I've written a book that I can't talk about. But I can talk about it to you, whoever is writing this question. I'm not seeing your name. Message me, and I promise I will chat with you. And if anybody else wants to chat about the ending, maybe just message me and we can all chat.
Okay,
so we are absolutely not spoiling anything. Yeah. I know, yep. I do. It's very, it's same thing on my Reading with Robin page when I say, okay, the book's out there, we've all read it.
It's a weird place though, yeah.
And then I still feel a little bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because then people will say, I'm like, but did you read where it said we were going to?
They read it. I was at an event the other day and someone was asking me what the books that made me love mm-hmm. mysteries. And I said, I was listing them off. And I said, and then I read Murder on the Orient Express. And then I said to somebody, I said to the group, this whole group, has anybody not read Murder on the Orient Express? And somebody raised her hand. And I thought, okay, I can't talk about
it
now.
I can't spoil this very old book.
Right. Yes,
you can't spoil this very old book. But because that joy of having, one of the things, that joy of having the experience of an unexpected twist and then another one, and sometimes another one, is really one of the reasons
that's the joy
you
of reading.
Read. You know,
yes.
The Usual Suspect and The Sixth Sense. And, you love that. You love that experience. So I don't want to take it away.
And it also happens in live book clubs. I mean, I don't know, I'm sure you go to clubs or Skype in with book clubs, and I've been invited to book clubs, and I'm a book club initiator. I don't, go monthly to any one, but I dip around. And there's always people that just, they're coming socially and they don't get a chance. And even though the group will say, hey, we had a month, still nobody wants to spoil anything. Yeah. And I appreciate that.
What a weird psychological thing.
I know.
Talk about psychological thrillers.
But I go to an actual book club where everyone is agreeing that everyone is, but it just, I've yet to see it really work out that way.
It's kind of great, isn't it, that one of the joys that connects us all is that love of a smart novel, of a smart ending, of a clever author.
We just have to talk about it.
Yeah, you just want to talk about it. So message me online.
And then we do, but we will not spoil anything. And we're excited to hear The First to Lie. Mm-hmm. I still remember the title. I'm like, if Emily were here right now, she'd be super proud of me, like that I could actually still remember. I remember a lot, but there's something about titles can get so trippy.
Yeah.
But that's why The Murder List.
The Murder List, yeah.
And trust me, you don't forget. I'm curious about the acknowledgments in the book and how you work on acknowledgments, and that do you ever feel like, oh my goodness, I did forget. Like, to me, that the acknowledgments seems like almost as much pressure as telling the story.
The acknowledgments, and I love when readers read the acknowledgments. I mean, it really shows you.
Cover to cover.
Don't you? I always read it because you always know somebody that they.
Well, I like to make sure I mention when I should be.
But I remember when I started writing my first book, Primetime. One of the things that I loved that was sort of important to me was I thought, oh, I get to write acknowledgments.
Yeah.
And this was a sort of a rite of passage to me to be able to write acknowledgments, and it is kind of high pressure. I mean, I sort of keep
it's like
track.
Murder. It's high stakes.
Yeah, because you don't want to leave anybody out, and once you start putting everybody in,
then everybody wants to be in.
So that's why
And so I am careful about it. It has crossed my mind to make it be very short mm-hmm. and just, or not to do anything at all, or just to say thank you to everyone,
I think that's got to be one of the trickiest.
Yeah.
You're working with a
lot
of sensitive people.
Do you on Facebook read the acknowledgments?
Yeah, I would love to know. Did you not dedicate this to anybody?
I did.
Oh, did I miss it?
Let me see what I wrote this. Yes, I'm just going to look and see.
I didn't see it, so I was curious.
Well, maybe not. I did The Murder List to Jonathan and Justice. And maybe I didn't do this because I didn't want to give any hints. But I did have the three.
I love these
quotes at the beginning.
And I always wonder too, like how those come to be. And sometimes they're so clever, where it's one is like, just Socrates, and then it's like and Cyndi Lauper or something.
There's
like
a
that.
Story there.
I love those because those are hard. Those are really hard. Last summer when we did an event, all three authors had, I don't know, they would just, they really spoke to me, and sometimes that can really happen. But I just think that for the book I haven't written yet, I have the acknowledgments already done.
Written.
I have the Q&A with myself. Well, I didn't know you then. Now I have to go back. See,
yep.
To me, the acknowledgments are so much pressure, absolutely, and mm-hmm. that, I mean, why?
You'd never get past it.
No, I just want to do the dedication page and the acknowledgments.
Somebody else write it.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about what you're working on. Also, I love to know, I think we talked about this as a reporter, your wheel's always turning. But what are you reading? You know, that's always my favorite.
This makes my brain just always
even
thrive.
If it's like books that
no
aren't
pressure.
Out yet, people it's because readers want to know what authors are reading and what they can look forward to. You must blurb, obviously you blurb
I
books
do.
And what they're sending you.
I love the book Bad Blood by John Carreyrou about the Theranos scandal. It's a marvelous fiction book. Did
mm-hmm.
you love that too?
No.
Fabulous. And there's also another nonfiction called The Radium Girls by Kate Miller.
Yes.
Is it Kate Miller? About the women who painted the radium dials on watches, which is just a tragic about the beginning of,
right.
of occupational safety and health and in workplaces.
At the forefront,
and
yeah.
Angie Kim's Miracle Creek
mm-hmm.
is an amazing thriller. Lisa Unger, The Stranger Inside. Peter Swanson's Eight Perfect Murders. I'm just in the midst of that. That's what I'm reading right now. In the midst of
that. Did
you
bring it on the train?
No, on the train I brought Citizen Vince by Jess Walter, which I'm reviewing.
Wait, is that new?
No. Won the Edgar.
Because
when 10 years ago.
He wrote Beautiful Ruin?
Yes.
Like how... Is he not writing? He needs to write.
He does need to write.
I was hoping.
Citizen Vince, I'm reviewing for an online, for Criminal Element.
Okay.
And they are going back over and looking back at all the Edgar winners. It's
this
brilliant,
neat.
Brilliant thing. And Citizen Vince, if you haven't read Citizen
Vince.
No,
I haven't.
It is, and I'm gonna say this in my review, there's a book called The Winter's Tale by Mark Helprin, which is one of my favorite books of all time. And when I read the review in the New York Times about Winter's Tale, which was a million years ago, I mean, maybe 20 could possibly be, one of the things it said in the review that I've never seen in a book review before was said something like, I'm very hesitant to write this review because I'm not sure I have the words to tell you how good a book this is.
Wow.
And that's how he felt about Winter's Tale, and I do too, by Mark Helprin, one of my favorite books. And that's how I feel about Citizen Vince.
Oh,
this
wow.
is like a special, I don't know how I missed it. It won the Edgar. So that's what, you know, one of the joys and one of the scourges of being an author is that you read a book in a different way.
Yeah,
I'll read a book and I'll think, oh, I'm not this good. You know, I'll think, how did this get published? Or, oh, I wouldn't have done it that way. You know, so when you...
It's very hard to just,
to just read.
You're
and
in
when
it.
You read
yeah.
a good book, when you read a good book, and the walls fall away, and you're just in the world of the book, like you were talking about, that you can't wait to get home to that, to be
yes.
in the world of the book.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm looking for. So it's rare.
That's rare. That's just like one of the best. I don't know if you read Teresa Ann Fowler's new book, A Good Neighborhood.
I've just been seeing that. I mean, she's amazing.
And it's domestic suspense. It's new for her. So she wrote Z, and she wrote A Well-Behaved Woman, and this one comes out in February. And I read it maybe last February. It's so good. It was a really good one. But that's the idea of what is coming, and people love to know what's coming.
That's why we have you. That's why we have you.
We got this one, we got that one. And should announce the new...
Speaking of what's coming.
What's coming. There
and
it is.
I was going to say that one of the books that I love is sitting right there.
Oh, yes, the one we're picking.
You.
The one we're picking. Before we do that, should we show this really cool...
Sure.
This is a surprise that Hank... brought. Well, we're going to mail them. So it's The Murder List. You know what? I keep books like this in my car because not a lot of text and drive, but no one ever said you can't do this.
You can't do that.
And I'm always writing, and I come home and I try and realize what I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sending to me. This mine's going right in my car.
Well, this is a Murder List notebook. It's beautiful with this suede.
Look at it with your fingernails,
finish.
Too.
I know it's very subtle. It's a suede finish. And a lovely strap, and then lines inside.
There's nothing like a
And I always thought, you know, wouldn't it be funny to have this at a meeting? and you just put it down and it says the murder list.
Absolutely.
And then you start writing in it, and people are going to wonder, am I on that list?
That's right.
But you can keep track of the books you read. You can keep track of what your thoughts or poetry or journal.
All of it. There's nothing like a new book. A new notebook.
So who should we send this to?
So what did we decide, Erin?
These are going to go to the four people whose questions that we picked.
Right.
And then I'm going to randomly pick probably, how many do you have?
No pressure, Hank.
Nope.
How many would you like to send out?
We can do 10, don't you think?
Sure.
Yeah, however many you want.
That's
okay.
So
nice. So we'll pick 10.
I love swag. An author with swag and suede swag.
Yeah,
Suede swag? Nobody has suede swag.
That's high class. Cool. So we'll pick 10 people who comment on this. I'll go tomorrow, so that'll give people a chance to watch it tonight when they get home from work. I'll see who commented on it tomorrow, and we'll pick 10 commenters, and I'll message them, and they'll get
Sounds
one, too.
Great. Oh, perfect. And yeah, and mine, again, right into my...
You're keeping this, though, right?
Oh, this is mine.
For air
yes. Oh, this is mine. Yes, and now, thank you.
This has been... Great.
So much fun.
And you know, we I'll be here on the Projo Book Club page whenever. And if you want to talk about the murder list, if you want to ask me questions about the murder list, if you want to do a review of the murder list, no pressure,
it's just
my career.
I think it's really good to remind people. Go to Amazon, go to BookBub, go to Goodreads, and ask at your library request. I know Erin and I went back and forth. People are like, we don't, the libraries, you know, poor Hank, shit, like, there's not enough books. And like, you know, the libraries, that's a whole other animal, how they order books, how many they can order, how it goes online. We can't get into the fiscal communities, the library's community fiscal responsibility, but we're doing our best, you know. That's just how it goes.
And for an author, it's the good news and the bad news.
Yes.
There's so much demand for your book. And I'm
right. That's
but
really
I do
great.
Want you to read it.
Yeah, and if you can share copies with people, and when you've finished your library books, please return them
on
that
time.
Somebody else can, you know, pick it up. And
are we going to drum roll?
Pardon?
Are we going to drum roll?
We're going to drum roll, but also, so this will continue to live on. The murder list continues. And
I hope you'll invite me back for the first July. We can have emerita authors.
Yes. Yes, I love that.
So now let's
first
move this out of the way because
to
you
lie.
Have such a great surprise.
I do, and it is, we're announcing this now, so people can start reading now, but we don't have a date for when we're doing
Not
it.
Yet.
We just are just announcing it, and I love that it has your blessing.
I love this book. I burst out laughing on page one.
And so did Erin.
Oh.
When she read it, right? We gave it to her, and it is Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts by Kate Reculia. Yay!
Who is hilarious.
And lovely and hilarious. And she lives in Pennsylvania. The book takes place in Boston.
Yes.
So I can't wait. I have not told Kate yet. I spoke to her.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I was
surprised.
I was going to send her a message directly. She is at Houghton Mifflin, and Michelle is her publicist. And I love Michelle. I love working with that whole team. And so I just sent Michelle, because I kind of wanted her to tell Kate. I know Kate well. I could have texted Kate, actually, and said, hey, Kate, we picked your book. But I wanted to do it that way. I think I texted you. I went right to you, probably.
And you probably heard me yelling right through the text.
It's just so exciting to be, you know, after all these years of doing book fun things, when Alan and Erin, you know, came up with this plan, I was like, it's a whole new way to share books and a whole new audience, and I'm thrilled. And it's Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts. And I wrote a little, just a little something. A handsome stranger, a dead billionaire, a citywide treasure hunt. Tuesday Mooney's life is about to change forevermore. And it is quirky and funny and timely and otherworldly, and also a nod to Edgar Allan Poe-ish. So that our providence.
And it's a reader's book, isn't it?
It's a book lover's reader-ish.
It's a treasure hunt. It's got Easter eggs and funny stuff and inside jokes that you will get.
Book
I mean,
people.
So much fun.
Right. And there's nothing like a book lover's book.
Yeah.
It's just a nod to, and Kate's obviously a huge reader. And that's the thing. It's like readers and writers, it's all that, just that community of, I can think of other books too where I read it and go, okay, we know writers are readers, but like really, really into it in that way. And it's Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts, and a lot of our favorites have blurbed it. And you're going to have a little longer on this one,
yes.
Right, Erin?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Well, they'll have all this week, they'll have next week, and we'll probably hit them the last week in December, right before the new year.
Okay, so you're going to have too much time to read this book. You won't be able to put it down.
Have plenty of time to finish
and
then you can finish the murder list.
You've got plenty. So it's Tuesday. For people who are like, what's next? It's Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts by Kate Reculia, and you can go check out her Facebook page and her website. And it's just beautiful package, and I'm really, really excited about it. And you can go to the library, start ordering it, order it online, and then let us know that they're out of it at your favorite library.
Good choice, Robin.
Thank you.
Really good choice.
Thank you. It was hard. It was really hard after this one. And look how beautiful they look together.
Ooh.
Actually. So clearly we're in this colorway.
I like it.
I do too. Look at how nice they are. And you were on a panel together at the
Boston
Book Festival.
We were on a panel together. She's engaging and lovely and terrific and wise and smart.
Oh, she's up for
you'll
fun.
You'll have a wonderful interview.
Yeah,
you'll have
she
a wonderful
is interview. Up for fun. So thank you so much, Hank.
Oh,
this
pleasure.
Was wonderful. Thank you, Erin. Is your hand holding up?
Yes.
Has it moved?
I'm great.
It's nice to be young with a steady grip. It really is. So thank you, everybody.
You are just amazing, and I have enjoyed this so much. And I hope we stay connected and stay pals. And please get in touch with me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and BookBub. Follow me on BookBub and Goodreads.
I gotta get on.
And we'll hang out, and you'll be the first to hear about the new book. You were the first.
You were the first
to hear about the new book.
Literally,
the first to lie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't
so wait. I can't wait for my galley. Thank you very much. Providence Journal Book Club with Reading with Robin. Find me on Reading with Robin on Facebook and follow me at robincall.com for more bookish fun. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.